Blog Talk Radio.
Looking for something different? Looking for something fun? Join Dan every Monday on the Freedomizer Network, 9 to 10:30 Pacific, noon to 1:30 Eastern, for Common Sense with the Educated Redneck, Dan Ellison. The show about everything and nothing at all.
Do you want to hear the truth about New York State and beyond? I'm Diana.
And I'm Dean.
Join us Thursday nights at 7:30 p.m. until 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we'll talk about everything New York State and beyond.
Yeah, nationwide news and local news and the tyranny that's going on here in New York State and what the Democrats are doing across the country, too.
We're going to talk about just about everything. Join us Thursdays, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, D&D, delivering the truth in New York State and beyond. See you then.
Good morning. Hi, Chris and Brandy. How are you guys doing? And welcome, everybody, to Everlasting Covenant, Free from Paul. How are y'all doing?
Hi, Rachel.
Good morning. We're doing great.
Awesome.
Enjoying the sunshine today.
Yeah.
Yes.
The sunshine feels
awesome.
Warm.
How are you doing?
Doing really well, thank you. I couldn't really talk a lot last week on the broadcast. Doesn't seem like just last week. Was it last week?
At any rate,
I know, right? At any rate, my daughter she had it first, and then I got it, and she had a relapse. So I guess we need to double up on the vitamin D and all the things, elderberry and all that good stuff. So, but we're both feeling better, and glad to be with you guys today.
Yeah.
Celebrating life and the beautiful instruction of our Heavenly Father and learning more about Him.
Yeah.
So,
we're confused.
Do you all have something in particular on your mind as far as direction this morning, or did you perhaps want to carry on with some digging into Jesus' words only? Chapter 7, why does Jesus mention Balaam in Revelations 2:14? Or I've seen a lot of people attacking Flat Earth this week. We haven't talked about that in a long time, but the program is your oyster. What do you want to discuss today?
I don't know. I'm enjoying the Jesus words only and going along with that and having some discussion.
All right, let's dig in. I agree. I've read this book, but I haven't read it in a while, and it's always good to study this stuff and see what we're missing. So,
yeah.
How I'm going to replace Jesus with the Messiah, because we know that's not his name, and I consider the entity Jesus to be the deity that Paul set up that doesn't match the one that walked in Matthew.
Sure.
In the Gospels. So anyway, how Messiah's reference to Balaam applies to Paul, or Yahusha is another word and name we can use. It's more direct. So if you hear me say that, same thing. If we dig a little deeper into the eating of idol meat issue, we find Yahusha mentions Balaam in Revelation 2:14. Yahusha says the source of this heretical idol meat doctrine is a teaching of Balaam. Yahusha says Balaam taught one can eat meat sacrificed to idols, among other things. Why is Yahusha mentioning Balaam, a figure from the era of Moses? Evidently, because Balaam is a figure who resembles the one who, in the New Testament era, teaches eating meat sacrificed to idols is permissible. What do we know about Balaam that would help us identify who was the Balaam-type figure in the New Testament church? The biblical story of Balaam in the book of Numbers does not reveal the precise nature of the teachings of Balaam. Yahusha alone tells us that Balaam taught the Israelites they could eat meat sacrificed to idols and commit fornication, Revelation 2:14. Thus, these additional facts. Let's make a synopsis of the story of Balaam. Then we can see whether anyone appears similar in the New Testament era. Balaam was a prophet in the Hebrew Scriptures who was changed from an enemy to a friend by the angelic vision on the road. Interesting. Balaam, after properly serving the Lord for a time, changed back into being an enemy. This inspired prophet is deemed to be an enemy of the Father because he taught it was permissible to eat meat sacrificed to idols and to commit fornication. This part of the story was omitted in Moses' account. Yahusha alone reveals this. Who else is a prophet of Yahuwah who changed from an enemy to a friend by an angelic type vision on a road, but then later taught it was permissible to eat meat sacrificed to idols? Who likewise taught an act of fornication condemned by Yahusha, remarriage after divorce, if certain circumstances were lacking, was perfectly permissible? Who likewise is interpreted by most Paulinists as saying fornication is no longer strictly prohibited and no longer leads to spiritual death, but instead the propriety of fornication is examined solely based on its expediency. On those key points, we shall see in this chapter that Balaam identically matches Paul. Yahusha is putting a thin veil over the fact he is talking about Paul. Yahusha reveals his purpose by referring to Balaam in Revelation 2:14. By citing the example of Balaam, Yahusha reminds us that a true prophet who has turned from evil to good then could turn back and completely apostatize. Yahusha's citation to Balaam in this context destroys our assumptions that Paul could never apostatize. By referencing Balaam, Yahusha is telling us, at the very least, that Paul could turn and apostatize after his road to Damascus experience. Of course, this is playing devil's advocate that was real and genuine in the first place, which I don't believe. Paul could be just like Balaam, who did so after his road to Moab experience. Pause for discussion. Do you guys have anything you want to throw out there to any of that?
Nothing really leaping up to me right now.
Okay. I find it very interesting, personally, a few things. One, that fornication and eating meat sacrificed to idols are equivalent sins. So we should not take that lightly. And The other being that in Revelation chapter 2, this is named as this entity that makes these two things okay, or proclaims that these two things are okay to the church, and much of the church believes him. He's considered a stumbling block to the Father and to the way to the Son. And all my life in commandment keeping, the really staunch Paulians, which of course would be any general Christian, has called me a stumbling block for keeping the commandments. And I just find that interesting, that the stumbling block is not keeping the commandments or pointing to the commandments. It's not keeping the commandments and
right.
pointing to
sure.
those things that are sinful and transgressions of the law, and also that transgress the law of life, which is killing, of course, killing, agreeing to be participant in the killing of animals. So I just, that's what I find interesting about it. And I find it vindicating, you know, that the Father took the time to speak through Yahusha in chapter 2 of Revelation to those points, especially that it's the last book of the Bible. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it's sad that, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. It's sad because what is called good, I mean, what is good is called evil when you say that keeping the commandments are a stumbling block, the Ten Commandments. You really can't go wrong there. You can, I mean, you're not going to be led into a bad situation. You're not going to cross a stumbling block if you're doing those things. And so it's just, I think the stumbling block is for the others that aren't striving to do those, to keep the commandments of life. And
well, sure,
yeah,
that's like,
well, and
the
in the great switcheroo of things that we've talked about, that Paul uses the true gospel and takes the negative image of it and portrays his own gospel on top of it, he is saying that the commandment keeper is actually a stumbling block to his gospel, which is grace by faith alone, you can do what you want. Thou shalt do as thou wills. We are stumbling blocks to his gospel. But that's a good thing, because his gospel is anti-Messiah. It's anti-Christ.
Wow.
It is. I also find it interesting that food slaughtered to idols, which is animal, it's once living beings cooked up and offered to a god, is also related to, as you said, the whorings, or the committing adulteries.
And fornication.
Fornications, which I believe that goes all the way back to what happened at the garden in the fall. As far as like the events that unfolded there, that's specifically things that happened.
Well, and something occurred to me this week. It just dropped into my spirit that, of course, the Messiah spoke in many parables, but it just dropped into my spirit that the what I've always thought to be a parable, where he said that the Pharisees are whitewashed tombs full of dead men's bones, that it's really not so much a parable, that the pagans' bodies are full of dead souls, dead, like you have said before, animals are not something, they're someone. They're full of dead beings. They're are, you know, when we're eating meat, our bodies are truly graves. We are graves. I mean, how horrible is that?
Yeah.
Instead of being a temple for the dwelling place of the breath of life, yeah, it becomes defiled in the grave, the place of death.
Yes.
I've seen a meme out there. I like it. It says, or maybe it's just I saw someone say it. It says our bodies weren't meant to be graveyards; they were meant to be gardens, and that's so
yes.
true. Your body works and functions better when you put higher frequency foods in your body. And death is, we know, is the negative frequency, and
or zero.
Zero, yeah.
Wow. So, is Revelation 2:14 a type of parable? Did Yahusha mention the teaching of Balaam as a parable to identify Paul? It appears Revelation 2:14 is a type of parable. Yahusha identifies the false teaching as the teaching of Balaam, yet Balaam is dead. Someone in the apostolic era is like Balaam. To know whom Yahusha meant, one has to find someone who matches Balaam's historically known qualities. Furthermore, we have a second reason to believe a parable is intended in Revelation 2:14. At the end of Revelation chapter 2, Yahusha says, "He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith to the churches," Revelation 2:29. This is Yahusha's standard catchphrase when he wanted you to know there are symbolic meanings in his words. Let's next try to identify who was the Balaam-like figure in the New Testament apostolic era by studying the life of the original Balaam. So Balaam was changed to a true prophet by a vision on a road. In the book of Numbers, written by Moses, Balaam begins as a soothsayer, intent on accepting money from Moab's king Balak. He was offered payment to travel to Moab to curse Israel. As such, he begins as an enemy of the true Yahuwah, I guess you would say. It says God here. Yahuwah then appeared to Balaam and told him not to curse Israel. Numbers 22:5-12. King Balak then called on Balaam again to come to Moab. However, Yahuwah appeared to Balaam and allowed him to go on condition Balaam did only what the master told him to do, or the father told him to do. I don't like to use Lord and all the pagan names. Just a moment, please. So apparently after starting on his trip, Balaam decided to still curse Israel. En route to Moab, Balaam on a donkey and his two companions are stopped on a road by an unseen angel of the Lord. What do y'all replace Lord with? I used to have a name.
When I'm reading, I just say teacher or master.
I use Yahuwah for Lord, or
okay.
I mean, cause that's basically what it's replacing in the Tanakh.
Right.
And for God, Elohim, the Mighty Ones, or the Almighty.
Right. Okay. Some commenters think Numbers 22:35 proves this was actually Yahusha, the eternal angel of his presence. Then the famous incident takes place where Balaam's donkey talks back to him. The donkey complains that Balaam is goading him by smiting him with his staff. What I have done unto thee, that thou hast smitten me these three times, Numbers 22:28. At first, Balaam cannot see the angel which is blocking the donkey, Numbers 22:25-27. Balaam is in a sense blinded. However, then Elohim opened the eyes of Balaam, and he could see the angel. Numbers 22:31-33. While giving the blessing, Yahuwah, through Moses, says Balaam was directly led by the Holy Spirit. Balaam simultaneously turned away from his prior practice of using omens. Moses writes in Numbers 24:1-2, "And when Balaam saw that it pleased Jehovah to bless Israel, he went not, as at the other times, to meet with enchantments, but set his face toward the wilderness. And Balaam lifted his eyes, and he saw Israel dwelling according to their tribes. And the spirit of Yahuwah came upon him. Then Balaam blesses Israel. Thus Balaam had become a true prophet, whom Moses reveals was having the true communications from Yahuwah Elohim. Balaam is indwelt by the Holy Spirit and repeats precisely what Yahuwah wants him to say. Yahuwah wants us to know through Moses that Balaam begins as a truly inspired prophet of Yahuwah Almighty. The last we see of Balaam in action, he is acting as a good prophet. His words of blessings end up as part of standard synagogue services to this very day, known as the Matovu. How Balaam fell, his idol meat and fornication teaching, then something negative happens that Moses only cryptically revealed. In Numbers 31:16, Moses writes, "Behold, these caused the children of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to commit trespass against Jehovah in the matter of Peor, and so the plague was among the congregation of Yahuwah." Balaam had counseled the Israelites that they could sin in some unspecified manner. This cryptic statement is the only explanation why later in Numbers 31:8 that the Israelites during their slaying of the Midianites also kill Balaam. Rabbinic tradition tries to fill in the missing information. It attributed to Balaam the lapse of Israel into the immorality we find in Numbers 25:1-9. Yahusha, however, gives us an inspired message on what was missing in the biblical account. Yahusha says Balaam misled the Israelites by teaching them they can eat meat sacrificed to idols and they can commit fornication. Yahusha is the only inspired source of this information. Yahusha says, "But I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there some that hold the teaching of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols, and to commit fornication." The rabbinic tradition in Judaism supports what Yahusha said, but only in general terms. So who is Balaam in the New Testament era? The prophet Balaam was a person whose life mirrors Apostle Paul's life to an extraordinary degree. Absent Yahusha telling us that Balaam taught it was permissible to eat meat sacrificed to idols, we would never have known how virtually identical are the two lives. Yet when Yahusha filled the missing detail, it made the parallel between Balaam and Paul become extraordinarily uncanny. And I reject that he be called apostle at any point. I know that they're referring to that being the mass opinion. But it's very easy to prove that there were 12 apostles, and they were specifically named, and the 12th one that replaced the betrayer, Judas, was Matthias, Acts chapter 1. That's my insert. Feel free to jump in at any time. I can stop and go back. Don't feel like you're interrupting. So in particular, Balaam's road to Moab experience has many striking parallels to Paul's road to Damascus experience. In fact, how it affects both Paul and Balaam is identical. Balaam is on the road with the wrong intent to curse Yahuwah's people. Acts 22:5, Balaam is on the road with two companions. Paul, likewise, has companions with him. Acts 22:9. Next, Balaam is given a message by the angel that converts his way to the true Yahuwah. Gill even says this angel is the eternal angel, non-created, of the Elohim's presence. Yahusha, because of the unique wording of Numbers 22:35. Likewise, Paul gets a message from Yahusha that converts his way to the true Elohim, Acts 22:8. Both Balaam and Paul follow Yahuwah for a time. Both apostatize when they teach it is permissible to eat meat sacrificed to idols. There is another odd parallel between Balaam and Paul. After Balaam strikes his donkey to make him move, Balaam's donkey asks, "What have I done to thee that thou hast smitten me three times?" Numbers 22:28. The donkey, in effect, asks, "Why are you persecuting me?" Balaam then learns that an angel of Yahuwah was itself stopping the donkey, stopping the donkey from moving. Balaam learns it is hard for the donkey to keep on kicking, moving ahead against the goads of Yahuwah's angel. It is hard to keep kicking against divine goads. Now compare this to Paul and his vision. Paul is likewise confronted by Yahusha with a similar question. "Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me?" Acts 22:7. And most telling, Yahusha adds in the Hebrew tongue, "It is hard for thee to kick against the goad." Acts 26:14. When Yahusha spoke to Paul on the road in the book of Acts, he was speaking in a manner that would allow us to invoke the memory of the story of Balaam. In Acts, Yahusha laid the seeds for us to later identify Paul as the apostolic era, Balaam. To repeat first, Yahusha asks Paul why Paul is persecuting Yahusha. The donkey asked Balaam the same question. He asked why was Balaam persecuting him. Second, Yahusha said to Paul that it is hard for Paul to keep moving forward against Yahusha's goads. Likewise, Balaam's donkey was up against the goads of Yahuwah's angel. Yahusha's words and the vision experience with Paul were well chosen to invoke a precise parallel to the story of Balaam. Thus, we could never miss the point of Revelation 2:14. We thereby could identify the New Testament Balaam. What do you all think about all that?
I think it's interesting about the angel and being the messenger of Yahuwah. Is that how it read?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I've been thinking about, there's so many people, it's hard to see the Akkad, the oneness of the Son and the Father. But I've been thinking about how the Father is the fullness, and he is the one with the thoughts. And when he is manifested, he's manifested as the Son, as the deliverer, which that's what Yahusha means. Salvation is of Yahuwah. So I just thought in my mind's eye, the messenger, the angel of Yahuwah being Yahusha in this story. And I thought that was really interesting because he is a witness and he sees all. And so I just thought that was a little nugget. Maybe it was just for me, but I really liked that part.
Well, a correlation to that with a man standing with a sword drawn in his hand is also found in Joshua, or the book of Joshua, Yahusha, chapter 5, verse 15. And this is where he wrestles with, this is where he meets with Yahusha, son of Nun, the leader after Moshe. Has the very name of the prophet to come after Moshe, which is no coincidence. But it says, this is talking about in verse 13, "And it came to be when Yahusha was by Jericho that he lifted his eyes and looked and saw a man standing opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Yahusha went to him and said to him, 'Are you for us or for our adversaries?' And he said, 'No, for I have now come as captain of the host of Yahuwah.' And Yahusha fell on his face to the earth and did obeisance and said to him, 'What is my master saying to his servant?' And the captain of the host of Yahuwah said to Yahusha, 'Take your sandal off your foot, for the place where you stand is set apart.' And Yahusha did so." So this is an instance where it's talking about, just like the flaming bush where Moses took his sandals off because he was on set apart ground. To me, that's and here's a, this is just shows an instance of a man who is accepting worship. And so to me, that's how, and he has, it's all tied in with Yahusha, the very namesake of the Messiah, Yahweh, our deliverance. And so I just find this, I agree that that was the messenger of the same messenger of Yahweh. That's an instance of the Messiah coming in to protect his word, what he said, so to speak. That's where he says in Numbers 22, verse 35, but only the words that I speak to you, that you speak. And that was the same thing that that he relayed that he did as representing the Father in the flesh. He was like, he said, I only speak the words that my Father gives me to speak. So as I'm disagreeing with, I'm agreeing with what you had to say as far as, to me, it's just the, it's a manifestation of the will of the Father's will. And so I just thought that was kind of neat. I do think it's also cool as far as like that the donkey, it was three times, which is correlates to the three witnesses. I believe you mentioned that is in Acts where Paul has his three witnesses or tries to have three witnesses. Unfortunately, they all disagree with each other, so they can't stand as witnesses.
Right.
And there's another place in Job where even a donkey is related as a foolish man. So if you look at it in the parable form at that level too, it's like it's the foolish man who takes the message who would carry Balaam or Balaam to the king, expecting reward for, or you know, just being a part of that type of being associated with that type of message. Just to look at it a little differently.
Right. I'm trying to remember, it's either in Acts 22 or Acts 26. What is the verse that is spoken that is taken straight from the play from 400 and something
BC?
Why dost thou kick against the pricks?
Yeah,
so, the pricks or the goads, it's however it's translated. Yeah, that comes from the
Shakespeare.
No, it's not Shakespeare. It's 600 BC, a poem to the son of Zeus, Dionysius. Dionysus, however you pronounce that. It's in Acts 26 verse 14 is where it's, where he says, Shaul, why do you persecute me? It is hard for you to kick against the prods or the pricks or the goads. And that's from it's actually 400 BC quoting.
Yeah, that's what I thought. 400
Dionysus, so to speak, in that play.
So I guess my problem with this, I see where they're going with the parallel and everything. It's just that I don't see that Paul was ever true, and I don't see that experience was ever true. I mean, it could be that the Father allowed it in order for there to be the second voice so that the pagans could have their convincing spirit that their ways are true. As the Father says, he would send that curse. But, you know, because I definitely do see a parallel there. But I also know that what Paul says he heard and saw came straight from that play in 400 BC, 405 BC. So it just seems like even Balaam from the Old Testament was truer, at least in the beginning, than Paul ever was to me. Mm-hmm. To me, he just as the Messiah is the son of the Father, Paul appears to me to be the son of the devil. I mean, just in the flesh came to lead everybody to the Antichrist ways and to directly oppose the Father, and to do it with art and skill and flattery rather than setting himself on fire and say, follow Satan, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I do. I mean, I also see that too. Paul was a murderer from the beginning. He was actively breathing hatred and violence against the true believers. And I don't see any place where he would have been following the truth and then become apostate. I think that's an assumption, even associating that word with Balaam. Because he was of his people of Moab, and I'm assuming Balak was too. When you look at Numbers 22 earlier up in the chapter, when the king of Moab called, he sent messengers to Balaam, son of Beor, at Pethor, which is near the river, the land of the sons of his people, to call him, saying, see, a people has come from Mitzrayim, say they have covered the surface of the land. This is verse 5 of Numbers chapter 22. So I don't see him as, just because he prophesied truth doesn't mean that he was truly of the Father. I mean, there are plenty of counterfeits that seem right, but this guy's also, he accepted money to curse. So there's also a place in where the Messiah said, or I believe this is the Messiah's words, Matthew, talks about that the truth is not to be sold for gain. So
I, the powder and then the water.
So I
make me one of those dark cherry chocolate ones at the back, on the back right. Sorry. My daughter's going to make me something. Sorry. I thought I was on mute still.
So. Yeah, that's fine.
You're fine.
Self and chocolate.
Yeah, a dark chocolate cherry milkshake. Yum.
Sounds yummy.
Okay, so what does it all mean? Paulinus apparently sense a problem. If Balaam's story were ever told in detail, they always identify Balaam as merely a false teacher or someone who prophesied for money. But this misses Yahusha's point. Balaam is precisely the example unique in Hebrew scriptures of an enemy converted by a vision on a road, turned into a true spokesman of Yahuwah, but who later apostatizes by saying it is permissible to eat meat sacrificed to idols. Balaam precisely matches Paul in an uncanny way, despite millennia separating them. Thus, in Paul's vision experience, Yahuwah laid the groundwork for a comparison to events 2 millennia earlier. What an amazing Yahuwah we have. Yahusha specifically made sure the encounter with Paul would have all the earmarks of the Balaam encounter. It would be on a road. There would be a divine vision. Yahusha would ask, why is Paul persecuting him? Yahusha would let Paul know it is hard to go up against the goads of Yahuwah. The experience would turn Paul around to be a true spokesperson of Yahuwah for a time. Finally, Paul would fall, like Balaam did, by teaching it was permissible to eat meat sacrificed to idols. Of course, to understand this, you have to have ears to hear, Revelation 2:29. In other words, Yahuwah set in motion what happened on the road to Moab, just as he did on the road to Damascus. Paul apparently indeed had the experience he claims. That's why Yahusha could cite the teaching of Balaam as repeating itself in the apostolic era. Yet to cement this similarity, Yahusha had to give us a crucial new similarity between Balaam and Paul by disclosing Balaam's idol meat teaching. Yahusha, in Revelation 2:14, suddenly made it appear an extraordinary parallel between Paul and Balaam that otherwise remained hidden. Just as Yahusha said Elijah was John the Baptist, if you are willing to receive it, Matthew 11:14, Yahusha is saying the teaching of Balaam that deceives Christians is the teaching of Paul, if you are willing to receive it. I'm going to read that again. Just as Yahushua said Elijah was John the Baptist, if you are willing to receive it, Matthew 11:14, Yahushua is saying the teaching of Balaam that deceives Christians is the teaching of Paul, if you are willing to receive it. That's pretty profound.
Yeah, that is. That's Matthew 11.
Matthew 11:14.
That's a good.
Yeah, that is a very excellent point. What about permission to commit fornication? Yahushua in Revelation 2:14 says, the Balaam of the apostolic era also taught Christians that it is permissible to commit fornication. In the Hebrew scripture, the word fornication meant primarily adultery. In English, it has evolved into almost exclusively the meaning of unwed sexual intercourse. The reason for this change in meaning is because Paul used the synonym for this word in 1 Corinthians 7:2, apparently to mean unwed sexual intercourse. However, in Hebrew, fornication's meaning differs from our own usage. Brown Diver Briggs' Hebrew Dictionary defines the context for fornication as to be a harlot, act as a harlot, to commit adultery, to be a cult prostitute, to be unfaithful to Yahuwah. Thus, fornication in Hebrew is synonymous with adultery. Out of this arises metaphorical meanings such as the above, to be a harlot, to commit adultery, to be a cult prostitute, to be unfaithful to Yahuwah. In turn, adultery was sex with another man's wife, Leviticus 20:10. There is no concept within Zana of to have sex among unwed partners. One can also see in context of Matthew 5:32 that the Greek word for fornication, as Yahushua intended it, had to have the underlying Hebrew meaning of only adultery. Yahushua says you can only put your wife away if she committed zana, translated in Greek as fornication, but which must mean she committed adultery. Thus, because the word fornication in Hebrew here did not mean sexual relations among unwed people, which meaning mismatches the context, we know Yahushua's original spoken language only meant adultery. This then was innocently translated as fornication, that is too broad in meaning. That's interesting because now I'm getting the picture that it's not just talking about inappropriate sex. It's talking about adulterating your spiritual covenant, the covenant that you come in. I mean, the name of our show, the Everlasting Covenant, if you make covenant with anything else, you're adulterating with another God. And that's very interesting. That makes a lot of sense because that encompasses all of the commandments. Because I always wondered why focus on that one command, and now it makes more sense to me. That was enlightening.
The old saying goes, "Who are you like even in business? You know, who are you in bed with? You know, it's like who are you coming into agreement with? If you're not agreeing with your father, your heavenly father, your creator, then you are adulterating against him.
In bed with someone else.
Yeah, in bed with someone else.
Doing business with Moab. Or Moab's King Balak.
Yeah.
Very good. So if we rely upon the primary Hebrew meaning of the word fornication, adultery, let's ask whether Paul ever permitted an act of adultery with Yahushua specifically prohibited. I'm sorry, which Yahushua specifically prohibited? The answer is yes. It is a most disturbing contradiction. This involves Paul's statement on remarriage. Paul says a wife whose unbelieving husband leaves her is not under bondage, 1 Corinthians 7:15. No divorce certificate was issued, yet she is not under bondage to her departing husband. Almost every commenter agrees the context means she is free to remarry without committing adultery. Calvin, Clark, Gill, etc. Yet as Paul describes the situation, the Christian woman was not abandoned because she committed adultery, nor had she received a certificate of divorce. However, Yahusha said in the Greek version of Matthew 5:32, the husband who unjustifiably leaves the wife causes her to commit adultery if she remarries. In the Hebrew version of the same verse, Yahusha says instead that a husband who leaves the wife without giving a certificate of divorce causes the wife, if she remarries, to commit adultery. Whether you accept the Greek or Hebrew version of Matthew, Paul says the Christian woman who both was unjustifiably abandoned and abandoned without a divorce certificate does not commit adultery by remarrying. I think that they kind of missed the broad point here, too. I mean, not that what they're pointing to isn't worthy of analysis, but I think that what they pointed out is that he's referring to the broad covenant, the whole covenant, not just a discussion of what literal adultery is, but what adultery to your creator is.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they get to that point. I don't know, but what'd you say, Chris?
I was saying, like, stealing the breath of life, the same covenant.
Yes.
That's in Genesis 9:10 and Hosea 2:18, 6:17, around there. The one made with the beasts of the field and the livestock and the birds of the air.
All of it. It's the whole thing. It really, you know, when I see how things are made very simple and they are uncomplicated, in other words, not just missing complication, but they are decomplicated. They are reverse complicated. Uncomplicated has a different meaning for most people, so they may not be understanding what I'm saying, but what was once complicated is now undone as complicated and now is uncomplicated. Does that make sense? And when that happens in the scripture, and when I read, it's like, aha, and I see it. And once I see that, I can't unsee it, because the Father in heaven has peace, and he's simple. It may be profound and seem difficult, but it's truly very simple to follow him. So,
little children can.
However, Yahusha says she absolutely does commit adultery under either of these circumstances. Since adultery is synonymous with fornication, in Yahusha's original vernacular, Paul permits the very act of fornication, which Yahusha prohibits. Incidentally, if the Greek text were correct, Yahusha would be resolving a dispute under the divorce law on what unseemly thing was necessary to justify a bill of divorce. Yet if the Hebrew version of Matthew 5:32 were correct, Yahusha was reinvigorating the requirement of using a bill of divorce, which apparently had fallen into disuse. Men apparently were abandoning their wives and simply remarrying without impunity. Whether the Greek or Hebrew text is correct, Yahusha was reinvigorating the law of Moses, and a Kampenhausen explains Yahusha reaffirmed it. For more on the fact that Matthew was originally written in Hebrew, then translated to Greek, it says to see these pages. And I also think that he's missing the bigger point, that it's not just on this one point that Paul opposes Yahusha. It's, you know, Scriptural Truth has a 4-hour video of side-by-side scriptures of Yahusha versus Paul. It's all throughout his entire message he opposes the Messiah. It's not just on fornication. It's on, you know, no man shall be called father, and Paul says, I'm your father, and, you know, it's on, so many different things. It's unbelievable.
Right, can you repeat that video or that ministry that you said?
Yes.
That live
Scriptural Truth.
Scriptural Truth, okay.
And the name of the video is Paul a Fake Apostle? There's a lot of videos out there, but that one uses the word fake.
Okay.
And it has a mosaic of Paul as its main screen. And you kind of, it used to pop up as one of the first, but now you, it's kind of buried. You have to scroll down. But it's 3 hours and 52 minutes. It's almost 4 hours. And I really like it because there's not a lot of opinion in it. It's just, here's what the Messiah said, here's what Paul said, you know?
Right.
And you can't argue with facts. I mean, that is true. The Messiah said X, Paul said Y, you know, on and on and on for hours. And it's really clear to see how anti-Messiah he truly is when you look at that side by side. No opinions. This is biblical. You guys want to stick to the Bible and say that we're apostatizing because we throw out Paul? We throw out Paul because those who canonized him and put him in the Bible did not do this research. And it's a requirement for us to each one, before we stand before the Father, to do our own research and know our relationship with the Father. Otherwise, this fake Jesus that we adhere to, that Paul instigates as the Messiah, the one that walked, becomes our God. And then when the Messiah is we are presented to the Messiah, he says, I tell you the truth, I know you not. I never knew you, even though you use the name of Jesus to cast out demons and do many wonderful works. I don't know who you are, because why? You were lawless. You broke the commandments. You didn't follow me. I pointed to Yahuwah and the everlasting covenant that changes not. He told you. He changes not. I told you. That was the last thing I said to you, is to go and preach to all the nations these things that I've taught you. I taught you the commandments. I taught you nothing else. So it's just, you know, and you can see that it's a different Jesus when you compare. Another thing that's different, that in Romans, in fact, the Roman road, in the sinner's prayer, we're told to confess with our mouth and believe in our heart that God raised Jesus from the dead. But in the Gospel of John, the Messiah says that he is loved because he laid his life down that he may take it up again. We're not talking, he's borrowing from truth and overlaying his own gospel. And it's so subtle, people don't see it, and it's become a mass religion that, like lemmings, people are just following until they fall off the cliff.
That's also a doctrinal
lie.
The Orthodox Trinity, three separate but equal beings, whereas Scripture says they're one. So that's the Roman Catholic Church definition of how they perceive the invisible spirit, and how, which I believe is the Father, and the Son resides in him, and it is expressed when, as he chooses to reveal him to.
Well, I think when they say they're one, it means they're in agreement following the Torah, because Yahushua says, he praises the Father. He says, let me be one with them like I'm one with you. So I think that means we all agree and follow the Torah. That's how we're one, in agreement.
We follow the will of the Father, doing his will. The Torah of the circumcised heart. Loving our neighbor as ourself. That's how I see. That's how brothers, I mean, I see that as the shoulder piece, brothers coming shoulder to shoulder. But it's interesting that Well, Messiah, he says in Matthew 9:13 and also in Matthew 12:7 that he desires compassion and not burnt offering or animal sacrifice. And then you have Paul in Acts 21 where he is being tested to see if he follows the Torah. And so he takes four men and offers to pay their expenses in Acts 21:24, and he takes them to be cleansed with them and pay their expenses so that they shave their head. And what this is for, it's for a vow of separation. Excuse me. And the vow of separation is, from my opinion, found in Numbers chapter 6, talking about the Naturite vow, where it literally talks about having days
Mother,
of separation.
I'm on air. You cannot shout in the house. I cannot.
I think she muted.
No shouting in the house.
No shouting. I didn't hear any shouting until Rachel responded.
Hello, Ron.
Hi, Ron.
I'm on my mute button so backwards today. My mom was calling from Twitter really loud. Sorry.
It's okay.
You're fine. But I just think it's interesting that for the vow of separation in Numbers 6, to do it, you must slaughter an animal. And so Paul in Acts 21,
So there we go, backwards.
He needs to do the same thing, which goes against the whole purpose of the Messiah being here. And this is after the Messiah. So to me, that shows that and then immediately after that, as you read the text, you see the whole city becomes into an uproar because of the presence of this man.
Are you talking about Acts, like 27?
Acts 21.
21, where the temple
is taken prisoner by the Roman guard, and they beat him until they realize he's a Roman citizen, which is very telling. Cause
where
that's he when
brings an uncircumcised man into the temple?
No. They recognize him. This is in Acts 21 where he's agreed to pay
Paul?
For the separation for two people. Paul, yes.
Yes. Okay.
He's agreed to pay for the price or whatever the cost is. Probably provide the animals to be slaughtered for that vow of separation. But when the 7 days were almost up, the Yahudim from Asia, seeing him in the set apart, now these ones from Asia recognized him and they stirred up the crowd and warned the crowd against him. And that's when it drew the attention of the Roman authorities and they imprisoned Paul. Before it was found out that one, he was a Roman citizen, and two, he was also of the Herodian dynasty family, and that's why he was given such special treatment for over 2 years. 2 years before he was kept safe before he went to Rome. And then there's another place in one of his letters that it talks about while he was in Rome at the end of his story. I mean, like, he found peace and lived in Rome and was unmolested. And so that's incongruent to the message of truth too. I don't see how, if he was a true prophet, that he would ever live peaceably in that city. And
right.
Not be, because he would be speaking out against, because they weren't converted to the time. They still had Caesars, and it was very pagan. All the gods they worship, and they still had Caesars that were claiming to be those gods that demanded worship. So I don't see how he could have told the truth and still lived at peace in the city, as he claims in his letters, unless it's because he had a counterfeit message and his job was completed, and so that was his reward.
Interesting.
This is some of my thoughts.
What you thought he was talking about was when he got Paul got exposed in Asia when they
right.
called him out, and I have the verses right here, and
okay.
it goes along with Revelation 2:2, and then so basically for anyone listening who hasn't heard this before, in Revelation,
which we were reading right before you got on, I don't think you heard that part.
Well, 2:14.
No,
this
I didn't.
Is 2:2.
Okay, well, the whole chapter.
Yeah, Revelation 2. It's a letter to the assembly of Ephesus. And it says, I know thy works and thy labor and thy patience, and how thou canst not bear them which are evil. And thou hast tried them which say they are apostles and are not, and hast found them to be false.
Bingo.
So yeah, I was just going to tie that together. So that's to the assembly of the Ephesians, which is in Asia. And in mm-hmm. Acts, it says, Acts 21-27, it says, when the 7 days were almost over, some Yehudis from the province of Asia saw Paul at the temple. They stirred up the whole crowd and seized him, crying out, help us. This is the man who teaches everyone everywhere against our people and our law and this place, filed this Kadosh place. And then even one more precept, Paul himself says in 2 Timothy 1:15, this thou knowest, that all they which are in Asia be turned away from me. So it's documented that the Asians turned away from Paul and they rebuked them. And then in Revelation 2:2, they're being commended for trying apostles, testing them. They found them to be false liars. That's talking about Paul and his, because Paul's making other apostles, like Barnabas or whoever, you know. They're false apostles. They turned away from him. Like, great, good job, you know, great job. Court of law, that would be, he'd be guilty. That'd be, you know, clear-cut evidence.
Very much so, very much so.
I just wanted to bring that point out. But no, we should be like the Ephesians. We should be, you know, like the Ephesians were righteous. And in their eyes, they saw it to be the correct thing to do, to turn away from Paul. And they got commended for doing so. So shouldn't we test all things, especially people who claim to be apostles or claiming there's a change in the law is done away with, it was nailed to the cross. Women need to be quiet. They can't teach. They need to submit to a man and cover their heads. You need to be abstinent like Paul. It's not a good thing to get married.
All those changes.
You should, like, be celibate. Paul's the one who instituted all, like, the hierarchies, that, like, bishops and the office of bishop and all this stuff, you know? Deacons, bishops, all these titles. That all comes from Paul. And that's what, like, the Roman Catholic Church, like, I don't remember where I heard this, but someone was saying that Paul was actually the first pope. Paul was the first pope.
I think that metaphorically he was, because he established all the things that the papacy, that became the papacy, the relics, the touching of the objects to pray, of which were considered holy and would cause you to be healed, which Paul was mimicking the woman who touched the tassels on Yahusha's garment, and the calling him father, the head of the pope is called father, the praying for the dead, it goes on and on and on. The things that you can see that the originating verse to support the papacy ideology all came from Paul. So metaphorically, he was the helm. I don't think he was technically the first pope, but metaphorically, yes. He gave the foundation. He even said, I build a foundation. I'm the master builder, and be careful how you build after me. He's declaring himself in the place of Yahusha, actually, and stating with my followers, be in fear that you follow me correctly, And then, you know, he gets himself off later and says, follow me as I follow Christ. Well, thank you for stating that, because if I'm following the Messiah of the book of Matthew rather than the one that you declare that changed everything, I can stop following you right here because you don't follow him.
And he wants to set up offices of men, like Wheat was saying. And whereas we're supposed to love one another as ourselves and love our Father. And so if everybody did that, then there wouldn't be any need for a hierarchy to ensure, so to speak, that the lesser receive from those who have a little more. Or however they perceive that to turn out. But what I also think is, like, when Paul says, he also talks to, like, do anything that the authorities tell you to do. And people, I have observed that people will take that, and they'll use that as an excuse to not think for themselves, because, well, I was told to do this. They have the mindset, well, I was told to do this, so I'm covered by the one who told me to do that. And so even if it's wrong, I'm still not guilty. And I think a lot of that's fallen, that's like a thread that's went into many denominations in Christianity, as well as people, even if they know they're doing something wrong or they see something wrong, they won't change their behavior or speak out against it because someone they perceive as being an authority has said it's okay to do. So rather than speak up for the truth and think for themselves, they just let the truth, the good be called evil and continue on with their lives as if, you know, well, it doesn't hurt me. So, but what they don't know is, it's kind of like, how would this place really look if everybody loved their brother as themselves or loved their neighbor as themselves? And we loved our Father first, loved Elohim first. I mean, I'm looking forward to the time when that is actually observed universally, the true universal, the true Catholic universal way, not the man-made way.
Not the true Catholic way.
Well, Catholic means universal.
But
in the true way of its original intent, as in the restoration of all creation.
That's a huge red flag for anyone. Paul says to obey all the governments. The governments are corrupt and satanic to the core. So all the Paulines out there, if they're listening to Paul, are they following all the mandates? Are they, like, cutting off the air supply with face masks and getting experimental DNA altering injections? You know, like I really hope not. And they should, you know, that should be clear for anyone speaking truth to see that, you know, the whole, I call it convicts, the whole thing was a con, was a hoax, was a scam. You know, they just rebranded the flu to scare people to get these tests and get the experimental jab and all this, like, you know, shutting down all the mom and pop shops. And meanwhile, Amazon and all the huge places are, you know, running as normal. It was just corrupt and wicked to the core.
Yep.
And, like, if you listen to Paul, he's saying to obey. The government says, you know, the government says all sorts of wicked stuff.
All governments of the earth are in the hand of the adversary, Hashatan, the devil. He says so himself in Luke 4, verse 5, when he's tempting the Messiah. He says, all this authority I shall give to you in their esteem, for it has been delivered to me, and I give it to whomever I wish. That's Hashatan speaking, as far as the principality that rules the present fallen state. And so,
the book of Job, it says, the world has been given to the hand of the wicked.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And Messiah even says in Matthew, Messiah says in Matthew that the kingdom is, the reign of the kingdom is here, but the violent has seized it till now. So, I believe the current. Go on.
Oh, I was just going to say that's, you know, where the separation of the wheat and the tares and the sheep and the goat comes in. You know, we're all growing together until the harvest, when the angel comes to separate.
Yes.
And you know, I'm hoping that I get gathered to be placed in the barn, that I don't just get bundled up to be thrown in the fire.
Hallelujah.
That's our expectation. Pass on to the right.
And yeah, you were talking about that scriptural truth earlier. How it's this lady, and she has some really great videos exposing Paul. But I just wanted to throw a disclaimer out there. It's like when I first found her channel, I was like, "Oh, this is amazing."
Yeah, I agree.
And she does have some. Like, she has some very great videos on Paul, but some of her recent stuff is straight up blasphemy. Like,
yeah,
I noticed she has,
I agree.
So just be careful. Be careful. Be careful with that channel, because she, the last video I watched, she was had some arguments saying like the serpent didn't lie in the garden. That was like the point of the video. So I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, I can't. Well, I can't support this channel anymore. But those
right, I agree.
Very good.
Thanks for reminding me. I always try to state that.
Yeah.
But I don't.
It
think
all
that
started when some people in her group presented her with the idea that Yahuwah is not the supreme deity, that he's evil, and that it's the name that they go by is like Yahuwah backwards. It's almost Ahuwah or Ahuwah, I think, or something like that. But what's that?
That's not.
They get it from Ayah, from where he says, from where he says, "I am who I will be." But you tell the children of Israel, Yahuwah Elohim has sent you. And so they haven't continued on for the full context of Exodus 3, and they just say, "Oh, this is where he says his name is," and it's not even a name. It's where he says Ayah.
Yeah, you're talking about Exodus 3:14.
And then 14. And then in 3:15.
Exodus 3:14. Then 3:15 he says, Yahuwah, Elua, is that Yahuwah is my name, the Elua of Abraham, the Elua of Isaac and Jacob. He's like, this is my name, my memorial name for all generations. Memorial. All generations. That's his name forever.
Yes.
He says, clearly. Saying a high, that's more like a descriptive title. Like,
exactly.
I will be who I be. The correct translation is actually I will be, not I am. Did you know that?
Right. What I will be. He's Elohim that makes stuff out of nothing. And so we don't know until we what we need that he's going to make it happen. So.
He'll be. But that's a Gnostic teaching, that whole thing that, like, the Most High isn't the supreme deity, like, and they uplift the female deity. Like, I've looked into some of this stuff before. I've seen some videos exposing it. It's just basically, you know, like the good guy, and you know what I mean?
He's a good guy.
Just converting
Yeah. And they think that if they do believe in a Messiah, it's more they see him as they call it an aeon, I think. It's like what might be, people might see better as a titan or, you know, some kind of mighty power.
Like a demigod.
A demigod, yeah. It's not really, he wasn't, he's not the, what brings us back to our Father, but something that's lesser than.
Well, these Gnostics believe the supreme deity is a female.
Okay.
See how backwards and blasphemous this stuff is?
Probably Source, and they use names like Source and stuff like that rather than...
I mean,
like,
they have a name.
My favorite thing, Yahweh, comes from the Source.
I saw someone saying God is the other day in their post, and they were using Goddess as the supreme Source. Like we would say...
Okay.
The Father or Yahuwah, Elohim, they were saying Goddess. And Gnosticism is new to me as far as the last 4 years. So I'm learning. But when you, when you said you know, they use that as like that. I didn't know that that went with Gnosticism.
Part of the
part of, you know, looking at the female as the supreme part.
No, they believe it's total wicked blasphemy. They say that there's a female supreme deity. I'm not going to say the name. And that this female supreme deity created what, you know, the Most High of the Bible, of Scripture,
yeah,
created him, and he thought that he was like the only one, and then he created, like, according to their nonsense story, he created like the earth and life and everything, but he was like a wicked wicked creator. And, like, just a bunch of nonsense.
That's
well,
backwards.
And Grace is a goddess.
What did you say, Rachel? Grace?
So,
Grace is a goddess.
Yes.
You know,
right.
Paul,
yeah,
it's a Grace.
Right.
A Greek goddess.
Yeah, female deity. But yeah, it's a real shame that the scriptural truth got led astray, because before she got led astray, she was putting out some really, like, that's like one of the best like Paul exposure videos I've ever seen.
Yes.
Ever. She has like 5 hours.
I think we should redo our own so that we don't have to point people to something that can lead people astray. Honestly, I mean,
yeah,
it's just actual side by side scripture. It would be time-consuming, but not that difficult.
That's true.
I was just thinking,
I mean,
that
could even,
we need that.
Well, we don't even need hers. Like, as you brought that up, I have in my notes, I'm always, like, putting notes on my phone, I have a whole list of examples where Paul contradicts Mashiach. And, like, I could even read a few. It's just so clear night and day when you do one against the other.
Oh, and
like,
you have your own channel,
well,
don't you? We could point people to Wheat versus Tares or whatever your channel's called.
Well, my computer's broken at the moment, so I need to get a new one. So I could only, like, make videos on my phone, which is really a real headache. And, like, there's always problems and so it's not.
I hear you.
I think it would be best to, like, create a new channel and just have it focus specifically on Paul. And it could be like a group effort.
Everlasting Covenant Free from Paul.
Yeah, there we go. And I mean, I have a bunch of these, like, I have in front of me. I can just read a few right now, like Paul contradicting Yahusha. Number one, on the time of the second coming. Just listen to the difference here. It's so obvious if you have ears to hear. Yahusha says in Luke 21:8, take heed that you are not led astray. For many will come in my name saying, the time is at hand. Do not go after them. So I want you to focus on that. Last time is at hand. Do not go after them. So guess what Paul says verbatim. Paul says, in Romans 13:12, the night is far gone. The day is at hand. Like in Paul's own letter, he says the exact thing that Mashiach says. They'll come in his name saying the time is at hand. Don't go after him. Paul says the day is at hand. It's, you know, the same thing.
Wow. So much, isn't there?
And then,
you really think?
Here's another one on the Alua or Elohim of the dead. Paul says in Romans 14:9, for to this end Messiah died and lived again, that he might be master both of the dead and of the living. And then Yahusha says in Luke 20:38, now he is not Elohim of the dead, but of the living. There's another contradiction. I'm just going through the list.
Yeah.
Well, here's another one. On dying, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15:31, I protest, brethren, by my pride, saying pride, by the way, side note, that's like the Lucifer, the devil, all Satan's like original sin was pride. I protest, brethren, by my pride in you, which I have in Messiah Yahushua, our master. I die every day. Yahushua says in John 11:26, and whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. There's just so many. I'm just scrolling through. Okay, this is a big one. You've definitely heard this contradiction before about the destiny of the law and the prophets. Paul says in Romans 10:4, for Messiah is the end of the law, that everyone who has belief may be justified. Then Yahushua says in Matthew 5:17, think not that I have come to abolish the law and the prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to fulfill. For verily, verily, I say to you, to Shamayin and earth pass away, not one dot, not one tittle will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Boom, how about this one? We kind of touched on this a little earlier when we're talking about how Paul instituted all the office of the deacon and bishops and whatnot. This is a contradiction on the number and identity of teachers. Paul says, 1 Corinthians 12:28, and Elua has appointed in the church first apostles, second prophets, third teachers, and his gifts, third teachers, then Ephesians 4, and his gifts were that some should be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors, and some teachers. Then he just keeps going. 1 Timothy 2. For this I was appointed a preacher and apostle. I am telling the truth. I'm not lying. Side note. Why is he doing damage control about lying? Anyways, a teacher of the Gentiles and belief in truth. And then another one is in 1 Timothy 1:11. For the good news I was appointed a preacher, an apostle, and a teacher. So Paul's given all these different like titles and kinds of teachers and whatnot. And Yahushua says in Matthew 23:8, but you are not to be called rabbi, for you have one teacher, and you are all brethren.
There you go. There is no apostolic order and hierarchy that like the one that Paul lays out.
No.
And I think therein lies a lot of the reason why so many Paulines are so loyal to Paulinism, because it gratifies their ego to be somebody.
Right, yeah, they want to have that office, that title, be a deacon, have an office.
Office of the prophet. I have a friend that has that on her voicemail. You have reached the office of the prophet. And then she states her name. She's really a sweet girl, but bless her Pauline heart.
Why,
and this goes over everybody's head, why does Paul say, I preach Christ and him crucified? Like, it's such a wonderful thing. That's all I preach, is Christ and him crucified. Well, shouldn't it be, and him resurrected, if you were legitimate, you know? I mean, and it just goes over everybody's head.
That's where life is at.
Well,
that's
Paul,
what, Chris?
Paul has his own message. If you're following Paul, you're not following Yahushua, because it's a different message. Paul says repeatedly, my gospel, my gospel, my gospel.
Chris, I missed what you said earlier.
I was exclaiming yes.
Oh.
As far as that, yeah, I mean, how come everybody's focused at the foot of the cross when you're supposed to be looking at the life that's given beyond that?
The power to resurrect. Is, you know,
A lot of people saying guilt and shame because of stuck at the bottom of the cross and they don't ever get over to the healing and the resurrection part.
Because they're told they're not a prophet or they're not a bishop and they have to leave that to those people. And just wait, it'll come along eventually because it's a false narrative. So if they don't know the way to go, then of course they're going to be led wrong and then they'll be in a constant state of fear or unworthiness rather than being healed of that and moving on. Never dying again because they believe in Messiah.
Well, if you follow Paul, you die every day.
Right. Yeah. Paul, I like
it. He focuses on death. He's all about Christ crucified, dying every day. Focus on death. It says you have a choice of life. I put before you life and death. If you choose Paul, you're choosing death. Paul, Shaul, Sheol, death, the grave, hell. I mean, it all connects.
All right, back to the covenant of death.
And the contradictions of Paul don't end. Like, I could just keep going if you want. Like, on the number and identity of shepherds, and I put in parentheses, a pastor is a shepherd. Paul says in Ephesians 4:11, and his gifts were that some should be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors or shepherds, and some teachers. And Yahusha says in John 10:16, and I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, will heed my voice. So there shall be one flock and one shepherd. And then on the number identity of leaders, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 4:15, for though you have countless leaders in Mashiach, he's saying there's countless leaders. And when the Mashiach himself says, Matthew 23:10, neither be called leaders, for you have one leader, one leader, the Mashiach.
Yes. Such good catches.
Yeah, we should make a video on this. You know, we could take turns reading different. And we could, I mean, there's so many more we could put together. It's like, I have like 20-something on the list, contradictions, with the scriptures we could do side by side.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, why doesn't it just all stop at 2 Corinthians 12:16, where he brags about beguiling? Oh, I caught you with trickery.
Because it's not enough. Because these people that say, "Oh, you're just misunderstanding him." Yeah, that's not what he meant. You know, he was talking about
if my lie leads to the truth, why do you still call me a sinner? That right there is the beginning of the end justifies the means, which is shady compromise of moral truth. Sounds like the Democratic Party started right there.
What about 2 Corinthians 11:8? I robbed other assemblies, taking wages of them to do you servants. Do you servants. Paul's a myth. He's a thief.
Yes. Yes, borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. That's where that saying came from.
And then, I mean, this should be like the nail on the casket. Paul says, it gets worse from the follow me to follow, as I follow Christ. He gets rid of the follow Christ and says, just follow me. He says that in Philippians 3:17. Brethren, be followers together of me and mark them, which, this is the second red flag, and mark them, which walk so as ye have us for an ensemble. So he's saying to follow him, not the Mashiach, and that his followers are marked. Is that the mark of the beast? I'll read it again because it's so, like, it should be so obvious. Brethren, be followers together of me and mark them which walk so as ye have us for an ensemble.
Exactly.
I mean, what else do people need to, I think it's just like we talked about last week, that you need to, like, have a righteous heart and be seeking the truth for your eyes to be open to this. These people, they're, like, ensnared by Paul. They're ensnared by HaSatan. No matter how much proof we give them, they just, it's like going in circles. They're like, oh, 2 Peter. Then you disprove 2 Peter. Then they're like, this, you know. Well, Paul taught the law. I'm like, well, he's a double-tongued devil. He teaches for the law, and then he teaches against it. He says he's all things to all people. He's like, when I was around these people, I acted like them. When I was around those people, I acted like them. When I was around these people who kept the law, I kept the law, even though I don't keep the law. And when I was around the pagans, I did paganism. When I was around the Satanists, I did Satanism. Well, he doesn't say the last two, but he may as well, you know?
Well, the pushback that I always immediately get is, are you saying that you're perfect? Or what about those that can't follow the law? Or, it's always that the law is impossible comeback. And so they cling to the grace message. But my point is that if the grace message isn't true, you can cling to it all you want, but it's going to crumble. We're forbidden to enter through any other gate but the gate that's opened, the narrow gate that's opened for us. You can't climb over the fence. You can't crawl under the fence. I think that's what is meant by the kingdom of heaven suffers violence and the violent take it by force. You're violent if you try to take something through robbery that isn't there and isn't established by the supreme creator for it to be taken that way. And if there's only one covenant by which salvation shall be taken, and there is, then any other way is violence. It's force. You can't force the creator when he created you, and he's stronger than you. He won't allow that. You won't be allowed in. You'll be turned away. It's impossible. So however impossible it seems to keep the commandments, if there's no other way, I mean, I want to say your heart better want to follow the commandments, but it's really not even that. His want to follow the commandments. And if you don't want to, I can only deduce that you're not his. I mean, it's a harsh, simple deduction, but there's really no other conclusion that I can come to, that if you don't want to obey the Father, your Creator, that you're building your own Tower of Babel on this earth to live your own narcissistic life and climb to Him by another means that was offered to you that you want to take because this other road looks too hard for you. You need grace. You need the salvation that comes by saying a quick prayer and claiming a name of somebody who's said to have been raised by the Father when the Messiah says himself that he raised himself, and for this reason he is loved. So who are you following when you pray that prayer? Not him. I don't know.
Well,
those are thoughts.
I'm the man of lawlessness, like totally, and I mean, it's pretty obvious. Paul teaches, and all these people who follow Paul or mainstream Christianity, they say, like, oh, you don't have to follow the commandments. That's work-based salvation, work-based salvation. I'm saved through grace and belief only, yada, yada. They believe Paul. Paul says, for by grace are ye saved through belief, not of works, lest any man should boast. That's Ephesians 2:8-9, when Paul boasts all the time. And that contradicts the Mashiach, that contradicts just the prophets, that contradicts James. But my brethren, thou man say he hath faith and have not works. Can belief save him? Can faith save him? No. That's James 2:14. And he goes on, even so belief, if it have not works, is dead, being alone. You do believe that Elua is one. You do well. The demons also believe and tremble. So just believing is not enough in having, I say belief, but it says in the KJV, it says grace. But I opt not to say that because that's a female deity. And just to really bring home that you're not saved by grace, and you do need work-based salvation. It says in Revelation 20:12, and I saw the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne, and books were open, and another book was open, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged from the things which are written in the books according to their works. So
yes.
If we're all going to be judged according by our works, then you need works. Works-based salvation, you need works. James, belief without works is dead. The demons believe. Paul, it's not going to end up well for you. You can't just sit back and believe. You have grace, and that's all you got to do, confess with your mouth, and you'll be raptured. It's not going to happen. I'm sorry. It's just like anything else in life. You have to do work to get it. Just like anything else in life. So obviously your eternal life, you're going to have to do work. I mean, it seems like pretty simple, right?
Yeah,
that's
sorry, I was on mute. Sorry.
Yeah, those are good points, and I'm glad that you're speaking about it because I feel like so many people were afraid to talk about works. For fear of, which many did, and many just still do, get that, oh my goodness, you don't believe that, and, salvation is a free gift. And I really, my heart has been wanting to talk more about the works side of what we need to be doing, because what we've seen in our own lives is that you begin working on yourself, and you continue to work on yourself always, as long as you're breathing. And then you also do kindness towards others. And it's not that you're earning your salvation, but it's, to me, the works part is a lot of working on yourself and then, doing for others. But I'm just glad you brought that up, really, because it needs to be talked about more.
Here's how it works with Paul. He pins faith against works and calls anything not done in faith a sin. Therefore, he makes works a sin. He changes the definition of sin to works, to actually following the commandments, is now sin, when transgression of the law is what the Father says is sin. So how could it have changed? See?
Yeah.
And so that's how he gets his audience to let go of the Father.
Yeah.
He makes it a sin to follow the Father.
Yeah. I was told that you're trying to earn your salvation. I was like, no, I'm not trying to earn my salvation. I love, when I was going back and looking at the Old Testament and following the Ten Commandments and those things and trying to clean up my life, and you're trying to earn your salvation.
That's like saying you're trying to prevent a divorce from your husband by cooking him dinner.
Yeah, that's a good way to explain it, right?
Well, without works, you're doing nothing. And I think what you're saying, I don't know the verse offhand, but I'm almost positive. It you know, just like all wickedness that we've been focusing on, it stems from Paul. I think Paul says somewhere that something about works, that if you think you can earn your salvation, that, you know, the Messiah, you know, he was impaled on the upright stake, but they'll say that he was crucified on the cross for nothing. Like he couldn't keep the law. We can't keep the law, so he's perfect, so he did it for us, all this nonsense. And then they even quote James saying that, like, oh, well, James says if you break one law, you're breaking all ten. So you have to keep it perfect, and no one can keep it perfect. I'm like, your interpretation is backwards and off. He says that, like, he says specifically, James says, like, if you keep commandments but you still lie, you're guilty. Or if you're a murderer but keep all the other commandments, you're guilty. He's just saying you can't pick and choose commandments. You got to keep all of them, and you do better.
Keep on keeping them. Keep on keeping them again. Yeah, that's exactly what he's talking about there in chapter 3.
Yeah, and that's when you should confess with your mouth, you know, to your brethren, and well, to the Most High, pray. Say, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Please help me. Please help me overcome this. And I've had lots of things that I've struggled with, but, you know, I've overcome, like, one of the last things, I really want to stop watching, like, all this, like entertainment, you know, like, with Netflix shows, because they have all this, like, stuff that glorifies the enemy, like, they're always promoting, like, wickedness. So that's something that, like, I want to overcome.
Well, unfortunately, it is time to end the program. I greatly enjoyed this time with everybody today, and so glad I felt better and could actually engage, but really enjoyed listening last week as well. But hopefully we can meet up here next week again, same bat time, and everyone have a very blessed week. Thank you for joining us today. We love you. And we'll hopefully see you soon.
There you go.